Welcome to this podcast from Off the Shelf and the University of Sheffield, in which research fellow Dr. Claire Turner from the School of Biosciences talks about her work for BioFest. BioFest is a unique festival taking place in Sheffield throughout November, showcasing cutting-edge bioscience research from the University of Sheffield through a programme of free events, films, talks, art, and exhibitions.
Scarlet fever, a diagnosis in a young child that would strike fear in the hearts of families, as it was a serious and highly transmissible disease that could be fatal. This was until the 1940s, when, with the advent of penicillin, cases fell and the disease was generally forgotten about. This was until recent times, the most recent being autumn 2022, when there was a sudden and quite dramatic increase in scarlet fever cases in the UK. And once again, there was fear around the severity of infections and the high number of children that were dying from it. This raises the question of why has scarlet fever returned to society at such high rates, and how do we prevent future upsurges? As a researcher, these are the kinds of questions I am attempting to answer, and we'll share in this podcast some of the ways we are looking into this. So what is scarlet fever? Scarlet fever is a highly contagious disease, more common to children than to adults. It is a disease that has been known about for centuries, although the first definitive descriptions date to the 16th century. During the 17th and 18th centuries, there were reports of numerous scarlet fever epidemics across Europe and North America, with very high numbers of infections and fatalities. However, it wasn't until the 1920s that it was identified that the disease was caused by the bacterium Streptococcus pyogenes. Despite this knowledge, it still remained a common and serious infection, with households entering quarantine if a member was infected to try and minimise spread. In the 1940s, with the advent of penicillin, which can effectively treat the infection, cases fell. And since then, cases of scarlet fever have remained relatively low until the 2010s, when we suddenly and quite unexpectedly saw an increase in scarlet fever cases in the UK. Scarlet fever cases have remained elevated since, with some periods, 2017 to 18, for example, showing even higher levels. The rise in cases has remained unexplained, but the most recent and even greater upsurge at the end of 2022 into the start of this year, 2023, was of great concern due to the higher levels of cases, as well as the association with much more severe infections, many of which were in children. The rapidity and severity of scarlet fever upsurges really highlights the need for further research into the causes of infection, namely the bacteria Streptococcus pyogenes, or how it's more commonly called, Strep A. And to better understand how it causes infection and how it undergoes changes that lead to infection upsurges. If we can do this, then we may be able to develop better treatments and even predict and therefore prevent upsurges. So what is Streptococcus pyogenes? Streptococcus pyogenes is named for its appearance under a microscope, as it looks like a string of beads, and also how it causes infection. The word streptococcus comes from the ancient Greek of strepto, for twisted like a chain, and coccus for berry or bead-like. So streptococcus means chain of beads. Pyogenes is derived from the word pyogenic, meaning pus-producing, as it tends to cause a formation of pus during infection. Streptococcus pyogenes is also known as group A streptococcus, and this term comes from the grouping system derived by the American microbiologist Rebecca Lancefield. There are a number of different species of streptococcus, which can look very similar when grown in a petri dish or observed under a microscope. Rebecca Lancefield therefore developed a method to distinguish between them using antibodies that recognise a part of the bacterial cell surface that differs between Streptococcus species. Streptococcus pyogenes displays the Lancefield group A part on its surface, and hence is termed a group A streptococcus, and can be distinguished from, say, Streptococcus algalactiae, which can look similar and also causes infections in humans, but displays a Lancefield Group B on its surface. We still use the Lancefield grouping system in diagnostic labs today to identify streptococcal species from patient samples. It is important to distinguish between them because even though they are all streptococcus, they behave differently and can cause different types of infections, not all of them in humans, and they may require different treatments. Strep A is also a name that has been used for this species of bacteria, and the name Streptococcus pyogenes, Group A Streptococcus, and Strep A are used interchangeably and mean the same thing, so for this podcast I will be using the name Strep A. So what infections does it cause? Strep A is what we call an opportunistic pathogen of humans, meaning it can be carried by humans harmlessly and without any symptoms, but when it gets the chance, it can cause an infection and become a pathogen. It transmits from person to person and does not cause infections in any animals, nor is it found in the environment, so you wouldn't get an infection from dirt getting into an open wound, for example. It can be carried on human skin or in the throat, including the tonsils, and it is at these sites where it causes the most common types of infections. Strep A is the most common bacterial cause of pharyngitis, which is a type of sore throat, and tonsillitis, but these types of infections are generally mild and clear up within a few days with general care and over-the-counter medicines, like Strepsils to soothe your strep throat, for example. These types of infections can be treated with antibiotics, and penicillin is usually the first choice, but antibiotics should really only be used in a situation where strep A has been confirmed to be the cause rather than a viral infection. Children are more likely to suffer from strep A throat infections compared to adults. In some cases, a strep A throat infection can go on to become scarlet fever, also known as scarlatina. The symptoms of scarlet fever are a fever with a sore throat, swollen glands, headaches, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, and general aches and pains. But distinctively, a rash appears on the chest and tummy that feels bumpy or like sandpaper, and on white or paler skin also appears pink or red. Cheeks may also appear flushed, and a white coating can appear on the tongue, which then peels off, leaving a red, bumpy tongue that looks like a strawberry. Antibiotics, again usually penicillin, can be used to effectively treat scarlet fever, although the infection will also clear by itself. The symptoms of scarlet fever or scarlatina are caused by a toxin that is produced by the strep A during infection. Scarlet fever is a notifiable disease in England and Wales, meaning it has to be reported to the UK Health Security Agency, or UKHSA, up until recently known as Public Health England. Because of this, UKHSA is able to monitor when infections occur nationally, and normally we start to see an increase in infections early on in the year, around January or February, with a peak of infections around springtime. In September 2022, however, UKHSA were reporting an increase in scarlet fever notifications that began to rapidly rise. This was unusual because the increase in infections was much earlier than we see in previous years, but UKHSA was also reporting on the severe, what we call invasive infections, caused by strep A, and these were occurring more often in children than we would normally expect. Invasive infections of strep A are also notifiable to UKHSA and are defined as infections that spread into parts of the body which should normally be sterile, so have no bacteria in them, like the blood, lungs, and the muscle and tissue that underlie your skin. On rare occasions, strep A can spread from the throat or tonsil or from the skin into these parts of the body, and these are much more severe infections that can sadly also be fatal. By the end of 2022, UKHSA had reported 20 deaths in children under 10, which is much higher than in previous years. We do see deaths caused by strep A every year, but they happen more often in adults over the age of 75. The peak in invasive strep A infections also coincided with the peak in scarlet fever cases, suggesting that the same strep A strains causing such high levels of scarlet fever were also causing high levels of invasive disease, and potentially other types of infections that do not get reported to UKHSA, like tonsillitis and sore throats without scarlet fever, and also different types of skin infections. We have in the past seen a link like this between a rise in scarlet fever cases and also invasive infections rising, the previous one being at the end of 2017 into early 2018. So why do we need to research strep A? We do not fully understand why we see increases in infection during the winter period compared to the summer. It is possible that this is due to people being indoors more, as this is what we predict for viral infections too. This seemed to be the case for COVID-19, for example, and also flu, which is much more common in the winter than the summer. It is also possible that exposure to viral infections can also increase the likelihood of a strep A infection. It has been shown that infections with flu viruses increases the chances of severe strep A infections. Other viral species that cause common colds have also been found in children with bacterial infections, suggesting that maybe they help each other out in some way. There is some evidence that the temporary changes in your body during a viral infection could help a bacteria cause an infection. As I said earlier, strep A is an opportunistic pathogen, and when something changes inside your body, it might then have an opportunity to cause an infection. This could be that the virus is distracting your immune system so that it's not focusing on fighting off the bacterial infection. Viruses can also make temporary changes to the surface of the cells that line your throat, and these changes can then allow bacteria to get inside and further into your body. We actually do not fully understand how strep A interacts with the human body, meaning we do not know what bacterial or human factors are needed for it to stick to a human cell, to grow and survive, and then what kind of changes are needed for it to cause an infection. The main reason for this lack of knowledge is that strep A likes humans, but not other animals. Therefore, to study how it interacts with humans, we need to look at human cells and human tissue, particularly human tonsils. Human tonsils are actually quite complex organs, although not essential, as many of you will have had your tonsils removed without any side effects. They sit on either side of the back of your throat and generally only just about visible, unless you have an infection when they become swollen and prominent. Although some people have large tonsils, which can cause sleep apnea, and so have them removed for this reason, other people have them removed because they are prone to having repeated infections, which can be painful and debilitating. The surface of a tonsil is not flat. It actually contains several crypts, which are like deep holes that go into the tonsil tissue. At the bottom of the crypt, the surface layer is thinner and closer to the bloodstream and regions of the tonsil which contain a high number of immune cells. It is believed that the main function of tonsils is to catch bacteria and viruses that we breathe in. These bacteria and viruses get stuck inside the crypts, which then enables our immune cells to remove them before they can cause an infection. Strep A has the ability to stick to and grow on or in tonsil. We actually don't know exactly where the bacteria are, but they avoid destruction by the immune response and cause an infection, resulting in sore and swollen tonsils. Strep A can also live on or in your tonsils without causing any symptoms, and we call this carriage. People who carry strep A can transmit it to another person who may develop an infection with symptoms. One key aim of my research group working at the University of Sheffield is to better understand how strep A interacts with human tonsils, in particular to identify what factors strep A produces to allow it to stick to tonsil and to grow there. If we know how it does this, then we can develop new drugs or even a vaccine to prevent infection. To do this, we need to be able to model a real-life human tonsil infection in the lab, and we have recently developed a method to allow us to do this. With permission, we can take the tonsil tissue from people undergoing routine tonsillectomies in hospital. So from people having their tonsils removed for some reason, and the tonsil tissue would normally be thrown away by the surgeon. We can rescue this and bring it back to the lab. We can then separate out the different cell types within this tissue. So there are the keratinocyte cells, which form the surface of the tonsil, and the fibroblast cells, which live underneath the surface and help the keratinocyte cells form the surface structure. We grow these two cell types in the lab, and then when we have enough, we can put them back together again within a plastic support system, using a matrix to keep them together and some specialised liquid formula to feed them. When we put them back together again and grow them in a certain way, they will actually arrange themselves to form a reconstruction of the surface of a human tonsil in a 3D model. This is what we call 3D tissue engineering. These 3D models look and behave like the surface of a human tonsil. So what we can do then is to add the Strep A onto these models and to see what happens. We can monitor how the Strep A grow, where they go, and also how the human tonsil cells in the model respond. We collect Strep A strains that have been sent to the local microbiology diagnostic lab from patients with different types of Strep A infections. We sequence the genomes of these strains so that we know what bacterial factors they could produce and how they differ from each other or how they might have differed over recent times. We then add these different Strep A strains to our 3D tonsil infection models using some strains that have come from patients with scarlet fever or some that come from patients with milder forms of Strep A infection. And we have found that they can behave differently on the infection models. We then relate their different behaviour back to their genomes. We can also alter the bacteria in the lab before adding them to the 3D tonsil infection models. So, for example, we can use genome modifying techniques to delete genes within the bacteria to see if when we do this, they no longer grow in a certain way or behave in the way that they did before we deleted the gene. This means we can work out the function of certain genes within the Strep A and the proteins or factors they produce. We have found that some strains are better able to infect the tonsil than others and use specific bacterial factors to do this. We also know that some strains have recently changed their genomes to make different factors which alter the way they cause infection. We have found that the strains that were most prevalent during the scarlet fever upsurges are the best able to infect the 3D tonsil models, and we are beginning to understand how and why they do this. Future work will focus on whether we need to adapt the treatments we already have or develop new drugs to target the factors that the bacteria are specifically using to infect the tonsil. These factors could also be good targets for a vaccine that would then prevent infection. Developing a vaccine is the ultimate aim of the Strep A research community, but requires a combined effort to increase our knowledge of Strep A and how it causes infection. Our unique research using 3D tonsil infection models is contributing substantially to this effort.
Thanks for listening. Find out more about BioFest at www.sheffield.ac.uk/BioFest.